Okay, we're holding at the bottom of Kufama Bays by the Mishnah. Previous Mishnayot have talked about all of the various details about what the almana is entitled to, or the grusha in those cases, after the marriage is over. Now this Mishnah is going to kind of go and do sort of the opposite. That's how Melechah Shlomo explains the relevance of our Mishnah over here. This Mishnah is going to be dealing with cases where even while she's in the marriage, she's not entitled to the various things that a married woman would usually be entitled to. The Mishnah says, Hamama Enes, a girl who did miyun, as we learned about in Yevamos, where she was married off by her brother or her mother or whatever, and therefore it doesn't exist midaraisa. Ashnia, where she was a shnia larayis, not an erum in a Torah, then of course kiddushin wouldn't be tofus, but where it's also midrabanan because it's similar to the arayis in a Torah, as we learned in Yevamos. The ailonis, or if the woman turns out that she was an ailonis, that she never physically matures, we learned about that in Yevamos also. Ein lahen ksuba, in all those cases they don't get a ksuba. In each case, the reason is different. The Mama Enes doesn't get a ksuba because she's voluntarily leaving on her own. The Shnia, the Rabbanan that we learned in Yevamos, a couple of reasons. One of them, Rashi brings over here, is because of the knas, for the fact that the Shnia may figure, you know what, it's in my interest to get this guy to marry me. It won't make my children puzzle because it's only awesome at Rabbanan. There's no downside in it to me, as opposed to later on in the Mishnah when we talk about Chai Ve'Lavin, there's a downside in it to her. Her children are halalim, she herself becomes possible to kohona, etc. So in the case of a Chai Ve'Lavin, the husband is the one who convinces her to get married, therefore just the opposite. We should make him pay out her ksuba. But in the case of a hero of the Shnia, it's the other way around. She's more likely to have been the one who convinced him to get married, and therefore we cancel her. And the other reason the Gemara had mentioned that we learned over there in Yevamos is because it's Takana Dirabanan, and Takana Dirabanan they need to give extra strength to. So that's the Shnia. And the Ailonis, Rashi says, because it was a Mekach Tov, because he wouldn't have married her if he'd known she was an Ailonis.
Why should she be...
So therefore, so we're saying she doesn't get a Ksuba.
Why not?
That's why, because the Mekach Tos, he wouldn't have married her if he knew she was an Ailonis. Therefore, she can't, when he ends up divorcing her, okay, so Tosfos points out that from Gemara earlier in the Masechta, that depending on the circumstances, you may or may not need a get. In some cases, you may not even need a get because it's completely Mekach Tos. In some cases, you might. But either way, she can't demand a Ksuba. Because he wouldn't have married her if he had known this.
You get up to 20 years?
It doesn't take 20 years to find out that she's an alien.
But he's paying till he died, opposed to...
No, he divorced her, Pashtus, yeah.
He what?
He divorced her, or whatever, yeah. So, in all those cases, did they stay married together? Did they stay married till he died? No. And we're going to talk about, towards the end of the parak, and we'll follow up on the basis, we're going to talk about, in this case, are we talking about when he knew, what are these various cases in the Mishnah talking about when he knew to begin with that she's an Ailonis or Chai Ve'Lavin or what have you, or we only found it out afterwards? No, wait, we'll get to it. So in Lang Suba, so they don't get a Suba. They like Paris, and they don't get Paris. Now, what do we mean they don't get the Paris? The wife doesn't eat the Paris, it's the husband who eats the Paris. So Rashi brings two explanations. Number one, it means, we learned earlier in the Masechta that one of the Takanas Chachamim is that the husband gets the Peiris from her Nichsim Alug, and in return, he has to bail her out of captivity if she was captured. Here, we don't apply that din. We don't apply that din. We don't make him do the Pirka in the redeeming her from captivity, which he would have gotten in return for the Peiris. Well, it doesn't mean, in other words, it's a regular case of pidyon shvuyim, then. It's an equal responsibility on everybody. It's not a specific responsibility on him. The other explanation, Rashi says, and the Rambam also agrees with this, is it means, suppose that this husband ate payrus from the Nichsim Alug all this time. We don't make him repay them. V'loi mezoinus, also she's not entitled to mezoinus. V'loi blois, and she's not entitled to the worn-out things. So what does that mean? Rashi says we're talking about that if she brings in nichset tzoin barzel, it included, for example, clothing, it was worn. Usually the rule would be he'd wear them and then he'd return her the worn-out pieces and she can use them for shmatzes or whatever. Here Rashi says she's not entitled to them. Well, it's kind of a new category, but Tosfos explains a little differently based on the Gemara later. That's actually, no, what we're talking about is We're talking about the actually paying her back for the depreciation of Nisketsen Bayerzel themselves. There's giving her the actual worn-out thing versus paying for the depreciation. Okay. So they don't get any of these things. However, im mitchilo nasal shem ilonis, but if he married her to begin with, knowing that she's an ilonis, yesh lo ksuba, then she does get a ksuba. Because then he knew. Then he can't call it mechatzos. I saw, by the way, an interesting word from a Peshel of Krakow, the teacher of the Shach from a few hundred years ago. He says he says in Parshas Vayero, when it tells the story how a melech kidnapped Sarah, and then the Eivishter comes and warns him in a dream, you better let her go and return her to her husband. And the Eivishter says over there, return the man's wife, ki navi hu, because he's a navi, and he'll doubt for you. So what's the implication? You should return her because he's a navi, and what if he wasn't a navi? You're entitled to keep her. So, okay, the Gemara darshans from it also that it means that Rashi says from the Gemara that it means that he'll know that you didn't touch her. But the Reb Heschel says a different word on it. Sarah, we learned in Yevamos, was an ilonis. She was naturally barren. The Eivishter created her the ability to give birth. So Abimelech wants to argue. Maybe they weren't considered legally married. Maybe he married her and never knew she was an ilonis. The Eivishter tells her, no, he's a navi. He knew it good and well and nevertheless married her. So no, she's 100% his wife and you can't even better return her.
If he knew she was an ilonis.
That's what the Mishnah is saying. Yes, Machsuba. That's
right.
What, yeah.
About the sumer, what did he?
So Abimelech wanted to argue. Maybe he didn't know.
But can you marry voluntarily an ilonis? You're supposed to do
peru. That's supposed to do peru. Okay, that's before Matan Torah, remember? But okay, you know. I mean, Avraham himself also. We learned there in Yevamos. Avraham was also an ocher. He was also naturally unable to have children.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, right. We mentioned a pasuk in Yeshaya over there. That the Eibishter had to create the ability in both them to be able to have children. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. However, almana l'kain gadol, grusha v'chalut l'kain hevyet, mamzeres to nesin l'Yisrael, bas Yisrael l'nosan l'mamzer, all the famous cases that are used throughout Shas of Chayvei Lavin, all those cases, yesh lahem ksuba, all those cases, they get a ksuba. In the previous cases, what we said, because it's Chayvei Lavin. So Chayvei Lavin, we said, on the contrary, we don't want to cancel her, we should cancel him more, because we should cancel him more, because he must be the one who convinced her to marry him. With the previous ones, by the way, the reason why we said there's no Peiris and Bezonis, etc., is because those are all Tznoi Ksuba. If there's no Ksuba, there's no Tznoi Ksuba. Here there is a Ksuba. It's an interesting thing, by the way, that Rambam writes, so what about Chai Ve'ese? The Rambam says that Chai Ve'ese, they also get a Ksuba. And the question is, then, Chai Ve'ese, for example, Mitzri, Adomi, etc. So the Ursameach makes an interesting point. The Gemara is going to talk about over here again, whether are we dealing with that he knew to begin with that she's Chayvei Lavin or not. You know what, maybe let's better talk about it when we get to that Gemara, because you can have a case when he knew that she's Chayvei Lavin versus not, and knew that she's Chayvei Esther versus not. He makes an interesting distinction why one should have a Ksuba and one shouldn't. So let's get to that later, actually. Okay. So, what's the version of the Mishnah? When the Mishnah said Hamama Enes, what are we actually talking about? Rav Toni Ktana Yotze Beget Ein Laksuba, the Chol Shekein Ma'enes. So Rav learns it means if this Ktana who was only married to Rabbanon ends up getting divorced with a get, then she doesn't get a Ksuba, because the marriage never existed Daraisa. Or because even we're going to talk about later that we learned in Yevamos that Rabbi Eliezer holds her marriage is not even considered a marriage Ma'alacha. It's just considered like a Mefuta for her Ktana, yeah. So if she's divorced with a get, she still has no ksuba. How much more so, as our Mishnah is saying, if she did mil. Shmuel Tani Mema Enes Ein Laksuba, whereas Shmuel learns our Mishnah at face value, that only a Mema Enes doesn't get a ksuba. Ava Yotzeh Beget Yesh Laksuba, but if she gets divorced with a get, she doesn't get a ksuba. And Mepharshim talk about the possibility. Yeah, well, the Mepharshim talk about, are we talking about that they actually are arguing about the version of about the wording of the Mishnah, or is it maybe the Yerushalmi has a wording of the Mishnah that instead of the word Mema Enes has the word Yisayma, and then you could argue what's the case of the Yisayma, that she was divorced or that she did mean. For as the Shmuel time, Shmuel goes according to his own svara. If she does mean, she doesn't get a ksuba. Yotzeh get yesh laksuba, but a Kana who gets divorced does get a ksuba. Similarly, also, Ma'enes le'poslam in Achin, le'poslam in Akorona, a girl who does miyun, she's not possible to marry any of his brothers, even if they had children. Or, Shmuel. Well, Shmuel, yeah, So because miyun, because we learned in Yevamos that miyun takes away the whole marriage l'chatchila retroactively, so therefore it's considered she was never married to him. Never married to him, then there's no problem marrying any of his brothers. Well, that's possible.
Maybe she
got a
tzura afterwards?
The brothers have nothing to do with it. The brothers were talking about whether there'd be an isur eshesach. Means that he didn't passel her. She's not considered a she's not considered a grusha, or she's not considered a grusha who couldn't marry. That only matters to a kohen gadol. Kohen gadol can marry a non-tzula. He can marry an amana. Yoytze beget passel an achon or passel an akuna. But if he divorces her with a get, she's passeled to his brothers and she's passeled to marry kohenim. Further, Mama Enes does not have to wait 3 months after the miyun before remarrying. We learned in Yevamos that you have to wait the 3 months, so in case she's pregnant, then we will know whose child it is. In the case of Mama Enes, we don't do that takana necessarily. Mama Enes is only a ftana, and therefore Tosfos points out that it's one thing if she gets divorced. Then you might confuse. You're going to say a ftana who gets divorced is allowed to remarry within the 3 months. You might think of Doyla could also. When she does miyun, though, it's blatantly obvious. Only a ktana can do miyun, so therefore it's obvious. Nobody's going to confuse anything. Yoytze beget, tzrich lahamtin, shleish chadashim. But if she gets divorced with a get, she does have to wait the 3 months. Even though physically she can't be pregnant, but loyt plod. We don't make distinctions like that.
So people don't
confuse, right, with the case of an adult woman, yeah. So the question is, my kamash malon, what exactly is Shmuel's chiddush over here? Tanena kulu. We learn all these things in Mishnayos in various places in Yevamos. Hamam enes be'ish. We learn that if a girl does miyun on a man, he's allowed to marry her relatives. She's allowed to marry his relatives. Well, like pasul min akorna, he doesn't pasul her from marrying a kohen. She's not considered a grusha. Nosam laget who also bekreveseav. He has to bekreve who pasul min akorna. So pretty much everything that Shmuel said is already taught in that Mishnah. The answer is tzricha lahamtin gimel chadashim. It's tzricha leid leitznan. Yes, but the chiddush is he had to mention the thing about the 3 months. That the ma'enis does not have to wait 3 months. That it doesn't say in that mission. Once he mentioned that, then he mentioned all the other distinctions as well. Okay. So we have this machloikas Rav and Shmuel whether a ketana who was married did a banan and then got a get whether she gets a ksuba or not. So, lema ketanoi, should we say that this is like the following machlokes tanoim? Rabbi Lezer, we learned it also in Yevamos, ein ma'is ketana klum, that whatever a ketana does is not considered anything. Ein ba'il zaka b'mesiyasa, so her husband is not entitled to anything that she finds, even though normally a husband is entitled to things his wife finds, we learned before from Eva. V'loi b'ma'is yadea, not in her earnings or anything, or her handiwork that she makes at home. He's not entitled to cancel her nedarim, and we're talking about the case where she's within a year before her bat mitzvah. Where then, as we learned before, and we'll learn much more in nedarim, that her nedarim are chal during that year. If she knows from age 11 or a boy from age 12, if they know that a neder is something addressed to Hashem, that you're doing it in Hashem's name, then it's chal. So normally a husband could cancel his wife's nedarim, here not. The Ein Yosha, he doesn't Yoshin her. If he's a Kohen, he can't become Tamei for her. The general rule of Rabbi Eliezer says, Ein Kish to the Chodava, she's not considered his wife for any purpose, Elosh Atzircha Miyun, except for the one thing that she requires Miyun. Which we learned in Yevamos there, the reason is because, after all, it does sort of look like a marriage to the outside world. You don't want people to think that a marriage can just be dissolved with nothing. You need something. What's the Kol HaShodavah? Tosfos explains that it also includes the fact that, for example, which we learned also in Yevamos, that if she's a Bas Kohen and she's married to Yisrael, she's still able to continue eating Truma, even though if she was an adult and married Jaredites, so she wouldn't be able to. And then vice versa, if she's a Bas Yisrael married to a Kohen, she can't. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, no, Maisik Tana Klum, the actions of a Tana do count for something. Therefore, Ubaila Zaka b'mitziyasa, so the husband is entitled to anything she finds, of Maitiadea and to her handiwork, or Vafaras Nadarea and to cancel her Nadarim. Now, how can he cancel her Nadarim? Klum, as opposed to Ainit Klum, which Rabbi Eliezer said. Klum means it counts for something. Rabbi Yeshua is saying it counts for something.
Right, so Klum means nothing.
Ainit Klum means it's not anything. It's a lotion, you know, just for parallelism. You know what it is. It's sort of like in some dialects of English they use the word any more in a positive sense, in standard English we say this doesn't happen anymore, but then in some dialects I think of Southern English or whatever they can use it like I go there anymore, meaning I still go there. something like that. Yeah. Okay.
So it means something.
So it means something, yeah. So he is entitled to her mitzvah, to ma'isiyah deo, v'afaras nedarim. He's entitled to do her hafaras nedarim. Now, Tosfos asks how. If midaraisa, they're not considered married, then how does he have the right to cancel her nedarim? The reason is because we would say that when she makes a neder, she makes it al das her husband. It wouldn't be because of the normal rules of husband and wife. It would be a specific thing that this Tana, when she's making a neder, she makes it al das that her husband will agree. Which is the same thing that you could have with any two people. I could make a neder, I'll das that you'll agree, and if you don't agree, then the neder is not chal. Same idea. Yeah. That's what Rabbi Shua is saying. V'yosha, and he can yarshin her, mitamila, and he can become tamei for her, which again, you get into the question, how is he able to become tamei her if they're not considered married, if he's a kohen? So the answer is, we learned in Yubamis over there, because she's considered a mes mitzvah. Since we said that her family are not going to be, may not want to bother burying her, because they're going to say we're not inheriting her anyway. So therefore the husband, it's up to the husband, and therefore we consider her a mess.
There's nothing else we'll do.
The general rule, Rabbi Yeshua says, she is considered like his wife for all purposes. Ela she yotze b'miyun, except that she doesn't need a get, she can go out with miyun. So it sounds like Rav, when he says she doesn't get a ksuba no matter what, whether she's divorced or miyun, sounds like he's going like Rabbi Eliezer. There was no marriage there, b'chlal, therefore no ksuba. And Shmuel would go like Rabbi Yeshua. And that's a problem, for one thing, because Halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua. Should we say, are we saying that Rav, we're going to say that Rav is going to be saying not a libid miyokhasa? The answer is no. A libid Rabbi Eliezer kulam alipligi. No, if you look at Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, then everybody would agree. Everybody would agree within that, even Shmuel would agree that according to Rabbi Eliezer, a ketana is not going to get a ksuba. So neither of them is really dealing with Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Not like you want to think that Rav holds like Rabbi Eliezer and Shmuel Davka holds like Rabbi Yeshua. No, Shmuel would say, yes, it's true when I'm saying that she gets a ksuba is not according to Rabbi Eliezer. Fine, but everybody would say that Rabbi Eliezer would say that she doesn't get a ksuba. That has nothing to do with what I'm talking about over here. the whole reason, after all, why you have kedushin for Uktana, why you have nesurin for Uktana in this case is just it's a takana for her benefit. Shalo yunag woman at hefker. You don't want people to treat her hefkedik. So within Rabbi Eliezer, nobody's arguing. So within Rabbi Yeshua, when Rabbi Yeshua is saying that she's considered his wife for all purposes, within that, Rav and Shmuel would argue, does that mean she gets a ksuba or not? Shmuel, Rabbi Yeshua. So Shmuel goes straight out like Rabbi Yeshua. He says that she's considered his wife for all purposes. Well, a wife gets a ksuba. The Rav, whereas Rav would counter, Ad tam l'ka'om Rabbi Yeshua ha'asem elamididolididay. You know what Rabbi Yeshua is talking about over there is what do we mean that the marriage is considered an effective marriage? We say things that go from her to him are going to be in effect. So, for example, her mitzvah, her ma'isiyah deah. We want to make it worth people's while to want to marry this ketana in order against shelo yunagu min hefker. So therefore, we give him a benefit. We give him several benefits in that regard by allowing him to have her mitzvah and ma'isiyah deah and so forth. But to say the other way around, that he should have to give her the ksuba and the tznoi ksuba or whatnot, that we wouldn't say. Even Rabbi Yeshua would say, yeah, that's not strong enough to require him to do all those things. Yeah. Mishnah.
And the fact that the other way around it works is... So
that's just to make it worth, yeah, to make it worth their while, yeah, for someone to want to marry this Yisraelina, yeah. Then the Mishnah said, v'loy blois, we said the Mema'enes, the Shnia, and the Yalonis, we mentioned a bunch of things that they can't get. One of them is blois, and again, according to Rashi, blois means whatever's left over from the Mishnah St. Virgil, and according to Tosfos, it means the actual depreciation, paying her back for the depreciation. Now you told us in Shmuel's name that this din is as follows: that this din about that she doesn't get the blois only applies to nichsim belug, where she keeps the keren and the husband is supposed to only get the peres. Aval nichsid sein barzel isla, but in the case of nichsid sein barzel, that she would be entitled to the blois.
The depreciation
or the actual leftovers. Yeah. So, Havi Bar Appapa, so the Appapa was wondering about that, was trying to think into that. Aheya, which of the three cases in our Mishnah is that din applying to? Ilei Ma'amahanis, let's try the first one of the Mishnah. Is it referring to the girl who does mir? Well, then what's the situation over here? Id Isnehu, if the Nichsei Malug still exists, if the blois still exist, then you're telling me that the nichsei malug, she doesn't get the blois from nichsei malug. Well, why not? I shakla. Either way, nichsei malug or nichsei tzeng ba'azel, a ma'anis should be getting. Sure, fine. You don't want to make it, but the husband has to give her something that she didn't have before, like the ksuba or whatever, because it's not his fault that she left. She did it on her own volition. But you can't take away from her nichsei malug or nichsei tzeng ba'azel. Why should you cancel her? The idolesnehu, and if they don't exist anymore, I divide the loishakla, then she's not going to get an either case.
What are we? It's obvious. What are we?
That's the question. So what are we talking about? A case where there's a difference between nichsei tzeng ba'azel and nichsei malug. Then she would get both of them, and if not, then she won't get either of them. Where is there a case where we're saying that nichsei tzeng ba'azel she will get, and nichsei malug she won't? Ella Ilonis, okay, maybe let's say it's talking about the case.
It goes all close together.
Yeah.
Or it does.
Yeah. So why is that? So Rashi says the reason is because he can say, look, you know what, it's true the marriage is over now. It's true it's considered as if there was never a marriage here in the first place because the Miyun takes everything away. The fact is, up until this point, we were married under the supervision of Beis Din, under Rishus Beis Din. I did marry her. If I were to divorce her, if it was my own thing, then I'm divorcing her, sure, then I'd be on the hook to pay her back for whatever was written into the ksuba and the nichsei malug. But like this, he can argue. If I were to divorce her as opposed to her leaving on her own with me. If it were me who broke up the marriage, but in this case it's her. Why should I have to be on the hook? Considering that all this time I had permission, I'll be allowed to use all this. So that's why you can't say that this case is that we can't say that this din of Shmuel is talking about the Mema'enes. There's no logical reason in the case of a Mema'enes to distinguish between Nichsei Malug and Nichsei Tzeng Ba'azel. Regardless, if they still exist, then of course she gets them, and if not, then we're not going to make him on the hook. We're not going to put him on the hook. Ella Ilonis, so let's say it refers to the case of the Ilonis. Again, let's ask, if they still are in existence, Idi Shakla, either Nichsei Tzeng Ba'azel or Nichsei Malug, she's still going to get whatever's left. There's no reason to cancel her. It's not her fault that she's an Ilonis. Idi Lesnehu, and if you're going to say that they don't exist anymore, fine, we can make a distinction, but Ibkami Ba'ile, the distinction should actually be the other way around. Nichsei Malug, Isla. The Nichsei Malug, which all this time are considered to be in her possession, she should get back whatever's left of them, because after all, they were never supposed to be in the husband's possession at all. He was only supposed to get the payers. Nichsei Tzeng Ba'azel, Dela Birshus Akaimi, whereas the Nichsei Tzeng Ba'azel that were not considered to be in her Rishus, because they were meant to be handed over to the husband, and he's just supposed to reimburse her at the end, then Lesla. Then now we should argue that fine, since he wouldn't have married her if he had known that she's an Ilonis, then we should say we should say again that we're going to allow him to keep her. We'll say he's potter because he couldn't have known, maybe he couldn't have realized when he married her that she's going to turn out to be an Ilonis. But that's the opposite distinction that Shmuel is making. Shmuel is saying she gets the Nichsei Malug, she doesn't get the Nichsei Tzeng Ba'azel. In the case of an Ilonis, why? Ela Ashnia. So it doesn't work. So rather, we have to say that Shmuel's din is talking about the third case of the Mishnah, the Shnia. So what's the difference? The concert abonal lidah b'didei or lidei b'didah. So the Chachamim canceled each of them in something that they should have been able to collect. Or not something that they should have been able to collect, rather, but something that goes to the other party. So in the case of the husband, we said before that the Shnia, we have to cancel her because she's the one who convinced the husband to marry her, but after all, he's at fault also, it takes two to tango. So therefore, we cancel her by not getting her ksuba, and we cancel him by making him give back the Nichsei Malug. the blood. The whatever left. Well, not the payers themselves. No, the payers, we said, we don't make them reimburse.
Right.
That was your actually second explanation. No, I mean, the blood, whatever's left, the blood, whatever's left over of the keren and the minister malug, we don't make them return that. Okay. Omer of Shimi Ba'ashi, Shema Minobi Rav Kahana. Well, then, based on that, we can learn something from the statement of Rav Kahana. Since we're saying that, so what are we saying? This Shnia is not entitled to the blood. She's not entitled to the leftovers of the Nixon Malur because we can't serve. Ordinarily, she should be getting them. So we learn from that. Ayla Le Grima, if she brings into the marriage as Nixon Malur, if she brings in a garment, a coat, Karnahavi, we don't consider that coat to be, we don't consider, before we learned previously, a few weeks ago, we learned a statement of Reb Nachman that in that case, the coat itself is considered the keren, the husband is entitled to wear it until it wears out, and the fabric itself, whatever's left of the fabric at that point is returned to the wife. Here we see that not, here we see that Karnahavi, we consider the coat itself to be the keren. We don't allow the husband to wear it, in other words. So we can't allow the husband to wear it until it wears out, because that we don't consider that payrus. That would be using up the keren. He's not entitled to take the keren of Nixon Malur. Question is, well, Amar Rav Nachman payrahavi, didn't Rav Nachman say before that the wearing of the coat itself is considered payrus? The answer is, Rav Nachman Kliga, you're right. Rav Nachman disagrees with Rav Kahana. Having said that, though, we do paskin like Rav Kahana over here, and we also paskin like Rav Nachman. So Mefarshim point out, Rav Shimi Ba'ashi, we paskin like Rav Nachman that the husband is able to wear the coat, and that's because the wearing of it is considered payrus. But we also paskin like Rav Kahana over here about the disposition of the blois. So how does that fit together? So Mefarshim explain because Rav Shimi Ba'ashi is saying that they disagree. Not necessarily. You could also understand it to say that the wearing of the coat itself is considered considered payrus. But ultimately, at the end, all that's left is the worn out the worn out garment. And anyway, according to Tosfos, the whole thing when we're talking about blois doesn't mean the actual leftovers itself. It means the husband compensating her for the depreciation. Not exactly the same. No, one is whether she gets the actual leftovers themselves. The other is she compensated for the decrease in value over time? Okay. Then the Mishnah continued. Ein lohen ksuba. The various cases that we had in the Mishnah, the Mamanis, the Ilonis, and so forth, don't get a ksuba. Amashmul lo shonu elameya masayim. When we say they don't get a ksuba, we mean the basic 100 or 200. But if there's a Tosfos Ksuba, if they added more into the Ksuba that the husband voluntarily agreed to pay, that they do get. Because that she gets to collect. Because Rashi says that's a matana he gave her. There was chibas via. He loved her because he had the opportunity to have relations with her. There's a similar idea we said before why Nesua collects everything and Arus only collects 100 or 200. Therefore, she's still entitled to that. The fact that the marriage had to be broken up because of Miun or Shnia, so what have you, doesn't change that.
Isn't it dependent on the original amount to the 200?
No, that's what we're saying. If the total Ksuba was 300, let's say, she won't be entitled to the 200 because the Chachamim considered her because of each of the different cases, because the marriage didn't exist midaraisa or whatever it is, but the Tosfos, he voluntarily gave her, so he gave her. We learned similarly in Braisa. Nashim Shamach Chachamim Ein Lahen Ksuba. The cases of the women where the Chachamim said they don't get a Ksuba. Kegoyin Hamama'enes V'chavereseah. For example, a Ma'enes and her colleagues. So what do we mean? Well, what do we mean by her colleagues? Some Mefarshim say it means the other cases of our Mishnah, the Shniyah and the Ilonis. Other Mefarshim argue on that, and they say that the Chavereseah is various other cases, such as the ones that we're going to talk about soon, where the marriage ends basically because of something that she did. For example, the cases that we had earlier in the Masechta Ivera Saldas, where she violates halacha, etc. So Ein Lahen Mana Masayim, they don't get the 100 or 200, Aval Tosfos Yesh Lahen, but they do get the Tosfos. On the other hand, the Chavereseah, according to this, wouldn't be them because the Chavereseah is in the next category. So, what? No, right. That's what it is. Sorry. Yeah. the chavrei se'ah. So the mema'enes, when we said mema'enes for chavrei se'ah, sorry, yeah, you're right. So one way of looking at it means the other ones from one mishnah, the shniya and the ilonis. The other way of looking at it is no. It means, for example, a woman who we learned earlier in the masechta that if it turns out she has mumim that the husband didn't know about before, or yudorim that he didn't know about before. So then we say teitzah shalot ksuba. You can divorce her without a ksuba, but she still gets the tosfos. On the other hand, nashim shamru chachamim yotzis shalot ksuba, but the women who the chachamim say they go out without a ksuba. They don't. The expression is not ein lahen ksuba, but yotzis shalot ksuba. To go in Iveras Aldas for Chavreseah, for example, the case where a woman violates halacha, the dinim of tznius, or whatever that we talked about before, or the other similar cases that we talked about over there where, for example, she curses his parents in his presence, etc., things that are her fault.
Women
who should leave
without
two women. No, come on. Yeah. We don't mean that they, yeah, the dinim of tznius, there we go. Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay, no. No. Ainlan Tosfos, they don't even get the Tosfos. For Choshken Mona Mosayim, they certainly don't get the 100 or 200. So what's the
Rashi
says? So well, because according to Rashi, the Chavrei Seha, means the Ilonis and the Shniyah of our Mishnah. But not all Mefarshim learn that way. What's the distinction anyway? Is it so? Rashi says that it's just a linguistic distinction. Whenever the expression is Ein Lahem Ksuba, then it means they get the Tosfos, versus whenever the expression is Yotzei Shelo Ksuba, it means they don't get anything, not Eker, not Tosfos. Other Rishonim disagree with that. They say it's not a matter of linguistics, it's a matter of we look at, is it her fault, versus is it not her fault, basically. So the Iveres Aldas, the Mekalelis Yolda Bafanav, etc., are things that are, and the Nedarim and Mumin, etc., are things that are her fault. The Ilonis, for example, is not necessarily her fault. She may not have realized that it's important to tell him. Similarly, the Shnia is not completely her fault, etc.
What's Mumin her fault, did you say?
What?
Mumin.
In the case of Mumin? So maybe Mumin not, actually. Maybe then Mumin are not. Maybe it's the Overus Aldas, the Makalelis, okay. What about if a woman has to be divorced because of bad rumors, as we learned about in Yevamos, that there's strong rumors going around that she was Mizana? Then she just takes whatever is still in her presence, meaning of the Nichsim Lug, and she gets divorced. Which the Gemara points out, that statement supports what Rav Huna says, the Amar Rav Huna, Zinsa, even if a woman is Mizana, lo yifsid of lo yiser kayamin. She does not lose the actual the leftovers, whatever's left of the nixim malug that still exists. She doesn't lose those. She's entitled to take those. That's what we just said. She takes whatever's before now. Well, Tani Tana commanded Rav Nachman. A Tana taught a braisa in front of Rav Nachman that said zinsa yifsid of loyser kayamin. That if she's mizana, she does lose these leftover the pieces of clothing or whatever that are left from nixim malug. Amalei Rav Nachman says, why? He's in Sapkelea Mizanoi. Why? She may have been Mizana, her Kalim weren't Mizana. Why are you putting a knas on her Kalim, basically, on her clothes, basically?
She herself?
Yeah, she herself was Mizana, but in other words, why should we say that Bloy Seha are still her property? Why should we take that away from her? Tani Loiv said the Bloy Seha Kayam, and rather you should learn that she does not lose them, which is what Rav Huna said. Because ultimately it is her property. You can make her that she has to get divorced and lose her ksuba, etc. But you can't take away property that actually belonged to her all this time. You could, but you're not gonna. That actually, no, this braisa that Rav Nachman that the Tana had said in front of Rav Nachman, it's not really a problem. Rav Nachman is trying to say that the braisa is wrong and you need to change it to loyefsida. No, rather Rav Baba Chana is saying the name of Rav Yechanan. That braisa is correct, but it's only one opinion. That's the opinion of Rav Nachman Stimasa. Stimasa means Rashi says that many of his teachings are quoted as Stam Mishnah or Stam Braitha without his name attached to them. How it is, I don't know. But the Chachamim say that if she's Mizana, she did not lose them, which is what Rav Huna said and what Rav Nachman said. So it's actually Machloket Tanoim then. Okay. And the Mishnah continued, im mitchila nasa chola, that if l'chatchila the husband married this woman knowing that, we're quoting from the Braisa before, that im mitchila nasa, from the Braisa in the middle of Omar Aleph, that if l'chatchila he married her knowing that she's an almana, then it is from the Mishnah, im mitchila nasa l'shem ailo, and it's yesh l'chatchila, yeah. So Amar Avoda, Ailonis Isha Ve'ina Isha. An Ailonis is a wife and not a wife, meaning sometimes she can be considered married and sometimes not. Almana Isha Gmura, but Almana, who married the Kohen Gadol, or all the other cases, the Chayv Elav of our Mishnah, is considered a full-fledged wife no matter what. Namely, Ailonis Isha Ve'ina Isha is as follows. Hikir Bar Yesh L'Ksuba, if he knew ahead of time that she's an Ailonis and still married her right away, then she gets a Ksuba, because he knew. But if he didn't know Ein Maksuba, then she doesn't get a Ksuba, which is what our mission is talking about. On the other hand, Almana Isha Gmura, an Almana to a Kohen Gadol was considered a full-fledged wife, Ben Hikirba Ben Lehikirba Ben Yesh Laksuba, whether he knew beforehand that she's an Almana or other Chayv Elavin, or he didn't know, then she still gets a Ksuba. That's the Tanakama. V'Rav Yehuda, not the Tanakama, that's the Rav Huna. V'Rav Yehuda, where's Rav Yehuda argues with that? He says, no, achas du v'achas du, isha v'ena isha. No, both cases, it depends whether he knew or not, that she can be married or she can be not married. Hikibar yesh laksuba, la hikibar ein laksuba. Not married. She can be considered a wife who gets a ksuba or not. If he knew ahead of time that... Yeah, so, well, the marriage is definitely tofus, yeah. The kiddushin are tofus, yeah. If he knew ahead of time that she was chayv elavin and nevertheless married her, she gets a ksuba. If not, then she doesn't get a ksuba. Basically, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction to Rav Huna. A bride says, "Kamsa b'cheskas she came." That if he married her with the chazaka of that she's so. For example, so she informed, she knew that she's an almana, but he didn't realize that maybe she's previously a grusha as well. So he married her b'cheskas she came, knowing that she's an almana. V'nimtzas she came, and it turns out that sure enough, she's just an almana. Yesh l'ksuba, then she would get a ksuba. Which implies hastama ein laksuba, but if he married her without knowing whether she's an almana or not, without her having said anything, then it sounds like she doesn't get a ksuba. According to Rav Huna, she should get a ksuba either way. The answer is no, that's not what the Braisa means. Lo tema hastama ein laksuba. No, it doesn't mean that if it was stam, she doesn't get a ksuba. It just means ela ema kamsa b'cheskas she'ena kain v'nimtas she'hi kain ein laksuba. No, rather what it would mean is that, let's say he married her... He married her b'cheskas she'ena kain, that she actually tricked him and said, I was never married to anybody else, I'm not an almana. V'nimtas she kain, and it turns out that she's an almana, ein lo ksuba. Then you would say she doesn't get a ksuba. Maybe the b'raita is not really dealing with the case of stam. The b'raita is dealing with the case where she told him, and it turned out that it's exactly as she said, versus where she told him differently, and it turned out that she hadn't disclosed the facts. Okay, question is, Avostama Mai Isla. So then what are you saying? According to Rav Huna's understanding of the Braisa, then you're telling me that if it was Stam, that she wouldn't get a Ksuba? Because that's what Rav Huna is saying, Avostama, that if he didn't make any Tanai, that he didn't make any tonight. Mm-hmm. So what are you telling me? Yeshla? Are you telling me the Braisa would be Isla? Are you telling me that the Braisa is implying that she would get a Ksuba? In that case, Adatani b'cheskas she kain v'nimtas she kain. In that case, why is the Braisa bothering with the case where he married her under the assumption that she is indeed an Almana, and it turns out that she's an Almana? Yeshla Ksuba, and they say only that she is an Almana.
Married her.
Knowing that she told him that she's an Almana,
right.
And it turns out that that's correct, she is an Almana,
right.
And we're saying that in that case she gets a Ksuba. Why does the Mishnah have to mention only that case? Lishma in and Stam of a Choshekin Ha. According to that logic, just tell us the case where he married him Stam, and you would say she gets a Ksuba. How much more so when she actually told him? The fact that Braisa doesn't do that, it only says she gets a Ksuba if. It only says she gets a ksuba if he married her b'cheskas she kain, implies that stam she wouldn't get a ksuba, which is like Rabbi Huda, not like Rabbi Huna. V'oid, tani kamsa b'yadua, v'nimtas b'yadua yesh la ksuba. Also, we learn in another braisa that if he married her knowing knowing that she's an Amona, the nymphus be a doer, and it turns out that that what he knew was correct, she is an Amona, yesh laksuba, comes to stam in laksuba, but this braisa, this second braisa, clearly says if he marries her stam, she does not get a ksuba.
Stam meaning
without saying, are you an Amona or are you not an Amona? And later on he finds out that she's an Amona. No, but that's as far as fine. So he again, he could write whatever he wants in the ksuba. He could write 400 if he wants, you know. That's not the issue. Well, he's a kohen gadol. He's responsible to ask. Or he's a kohen gadol with an amana.
Yeah.
He
should ask.
He should ask, yeah. The bottom line is we have one braisa that implies and one braisa...
If he doesn't ask.
Yeah. But the... Stam was saying the second braisa clearly says ein luksuba, that she doesn't get a ksuba, right? Now that's the question, right? Rav Huna had said before that it doesn't matter when a kohen gadol marries an almana or any chayvei lavin, it doesn't matter whether he knew or he didn't know, either way she gets a ksuba. Rav Yehuda was the one who said that it depends whether he knew or not. Well, the first braisa implies and the second braisa says clearly that unless he knew that she's an Amana, she doesn't get a ksuba. This is a contradiction to Rav Huna.
Because initially we said...
Because Rav Huna would say that she does get a ksuba regardless. The answer is, you're right. Rav Huna is refuted by this braisa. So where did he come up with his idea? Masnissin at isay. Our Mishnah misled him into his opinion. He figured since we're making a distinction with an Ilonis, but we're not making a distinction with an Almona. The Mishnah says about the Ilonis if he knew versus he didn't know. Didn't say anything about the Almona. Mikal the Almona after the Staminami Isla. So he thought that meant that regardless the Almona always gets. Velohi, but that's not what the Mishnah says. Kikatani Lala Almona put to the Ilonis Koi. Because when the Mishnah continues with the case of the Almona and saying she has a ksuba, it's following on the distinction that was already made with the Ilonis. The Mishnah doesn't repeat the distinction with an Almona because it's the same distinction as with an Ilonis, like Rav Yehuda says.
Aput
to the Ilonis Koi, it's referring to the same distinction that's made in the case of the Ilonis. So just like with the Ilonis, it depends whether he knew ahead of time or not, whether she gets the ksuba. So it is with the Amon of the Kohen Gadol and the rest of those cases. The Rav Huna didn't realize that, and that's why he thought that there was that distinction. So the bottom line is the halacha is like Rav Yehuda.
He didn't realize that.
The Mishnah misled him. The wording of the Mishnah misled him, yeah. So the bottom line is the halacha is like Rav Yehuda, that it depends whether he knew ahead of time or not. If he didn't know ahead of time that she's chayvei lavin and she doesn't get a ksuba, if he knew then she does get a ksuba. And here's the distinction, actually. So the Rambam holds that in the case of chayvei esse, if she's also to him under an esse, for example, mitzvi or joimi or whatever, then either way she gets a ksuba whether he knew about it or not. So what's the reason? Why the difference between the lav and the esse? So Rav Sameach makes a very interesting point. He says the Rambam's shita, the Rambam's famous shita is that any relations that a man and woman have outside of marriage is a violation of the lav loitziyah kedesha, that you're not allowed to be promiscuous. The Raiva disagrees with the Rambam on that, but the Rambam holds that anything outside of kippah the kiddushin is considered loitziyah kedesha.
No pelagish, right.
The Rambam says that Pelagish is allowed to a king, but not to anybody else, right? So
why was it allowed earlier, and now it's not?
Who says it was allowed earlier? You don't find commentaries about Pelagish. What a Pelagish consists of is another Pelagish anyway, whether it involves that there is condition, but no ksuba, et cetera. Anyway, that's it. Okay, so the point is, therefore, that Rosameach says like this. So with the case of Chayvei Lavin, you can say, you can either way the guy is being over on a lav. If you're going to say that he married her and had relations with her, if you're going to say that it's considered a valid marriage, then he's over on whichever lav it is, the Amon of the Kohen Gadol, etc. If you're going to say that you don't want it to be considered a marriage, he's anyway over on the lav of loyalty of nation. Therefore, depending on the situation, whether he knew or not, it will depend whether he pays the ksuba or not. If he didn't know ahead of time, don't make him pay the ksuba. As opposed to, in the case of Chayva Esse, if you say that he doesn't have to pay the ksuba, in the case of Chayva Esse, you're making him be over on the lav of Loitzi Kedesha. better, therefore, he should have to pay the ksuba, whether he knew about it or not, and that saves him from being over on that lot, at least.
Because that way,
since there's a ksuba, then there's no loyalty of Seisha. Hadron Allah on one of Mishnah says, "Hanoi says to Isha, if a man marries a woman, and she makes up with him a deal that I'm marrying you on condition that you will support my daughter from a previous marriage for 5 years. I was in a chameshanim. Okay, then he has to support her for 5 years because that's the deal. Why if it's 5 years? By the way, the Tosfos Yom Tov says a vort that we learned earlier in the Masechta that a woman shouldn't remarry for 2 years when if she has a baby under 2 years old, she's still nursing the baby, and you don't want her to become pregnant and then ruin her milk supply. So therefore, this woman is getting married.
Is it applicable today?
I don't know to what extent it's applicable today since their formula and whatnot, but I don't know. So, therefore, the vote is, the Tosfos Yom Tov says that she's marrying when she has a two-year-old daughter. She wants to make sure her daughter is supported until she's 7 years old, at which point she can at least start earning some money for herself. Nisislach, so now what happens if the husband who... So let's give names over here. This woman was first married to Reuben and had a daughter with him. Reuben died, so now she's marrying Shimon and makes up with him, you have to support my daughter for 5 years. Now she divorces Shimon and marries Levi. Nisislacha, she marries Levi. She makes the same deal with him, that you're going to support my daughter from the first marriage for 5 years. Also, Chayav Lazona Chameshanim, he also has to support her for 5 years. So now you have two husbands, one current and one previous one, who are on the hook for child support for this kid. So the second husband, Shimon, can't say, you know what, if she were to be by me, then I will support the daughter, which means, so Rashi says it means that Shimon can't, you would think Shimon might be able to argue, look, I agreed to support this daughter because I was marrying the mother. Now that I'm divorced from the mother, why should I still be on the hook for it? If the mother was around, then I would do it. You can't do that. Other Mephoshim say that it all... So the two supports, how that works, we'll see in a second. Other Beforshim say that it also means he can't say, Lukshatava etzli azuna, this daughter, when she visits me for custody, visitation, or whatever, then I'll support her, but otherwise, as long as she's living with her mother and her mother's new husband, then let him support her. No, he doesn't have the right to say that. He has to take her food to the place where her mother is, to her mother's house.
Why don't we just take the case of the daughter, why not a son?
It's a good question. I don't know. Because the mission is going to continue. Well, because the mission is going to continue with cases what happens after the death when there's no Yerusha, but there's still a matter of Mizonis. Son, if it was a matter of a son, eventually it would be Yarshin property. There wouldn't be a matter of Mizonis. That's
small.
We're not talking, but we're talking about what happens after the parent dies. Oh, wait.
When the first one is it doesn't mean. You go back to her. I mean, you can't go back to her.
No. Right. So Rashi said.
I mean, how do you stay for?
Had she stayed with me, that's how Rashi learned that. Yeah, then I would. But now I don't feel like I should have to. Or according to the other showing, it means that I'll only support her when she's actually staying by me, the daughter, but not when she's staying with her mother. No,
that's
you don't do that. Okay.
Custody and.
Yeah.
And
okay. Also, both of them can't say we're going to give her food. We don't split the child support between them. Rather, one gives her actual food, and the other one gives her the money that would have gone towards her food. So both of them are on the hook for the full amount. In other words,
she collects twice.
She collects twice, basically. Nisis, what happens when this daughter gets when this daughter gets married? Habal nois l'mazonis, and this is another reason why I mentioned the daughter, because the son, once the son, there's no issue of mazonis. But that's because the mission is so it's continuing with the same case. If this daughter, during those 5 years, gets married, then her husband is responsible for mazonis. So now, what happens to the two husbands? Behein nois l'mazonis mazonis. So now, both of her mother's husbands, the current and the previous one, give her the money that would have gone towards mazonis. They can't say we're just going to give her food because her husband already is doing that.
The 5 years is not up yet.
Right, and that's why both husbands
have to give money. They still have to give money, and the daughter's husband is the one who gives her actual food.
Right.
Mesu. Yeah. What happens if one or the other of these husbands dies? B'nechen nizonis b'nechas b'necharin. So their own daughters get nizonis from b'nechas and b'necharin, from property that still belonged to the father when he died, or that belongs to the yisomim now. Because we learned before a few times already that because of tikkun olam we don't take from nizonis habas, we don't take for daughters support, we don't take from nechas and shabadim, we don't collect from property that was sold to other people, because otherwise nobody will ever want to buy property. But this stepdaughter can be supported even from the chasam shabadim. Because she's considered like a baal choy. She has a shtar against them. All this that we're talking about, by the way, is and we'll see this in the Gemara, is not talking about there wasn't just a verbal agreement. There was an actual shtar. Well, actually, we'll see in a second. Actually, we'll see in the Gemara. It may have been in Raman. Whatever. For the moment, we're assuming that there's a shtar. Well, she
benefits from the shabadim.
Even from Mishabadim, just like a Bachai. As opposed to Shimon's own daughters or Levi's own daughters. Shimon's daughters, once Shimon dies, can only be supported from B'nai Charin. But because there's still 4 years or 3 years or whatever it is left on this note where he owes this daughter, Mizonis, or Dmei Mizonis in this case, well, she's like a Bachai, so she can collect from Mishabadim. Hapikchim, smart people, would avoid the whole issue. Hayu Kosvim, they would write in the document, Hamunascha Ezunus Pitich, Chamishonim, Koldman Sha'atibi. They would attach an extra clause over there. I'll support your daughter for 5 years as long as you, the mother, are still married to me. So now the Gemara starts off on a topic which is going
to.
You might not think it's so obvious. I don't know. Okay, so the Gemara is going to start off on a topic over here, which is going to then relate back to this thing in the Mishnah. It's not. The Amoraim had a discussion as follows. If Reuben says to Shimon, I owe you a money, Rabbi Yochanan Machayev, Rish Lakish Am Apater. So Rabbi Yochanan says, okay, he owes him a money, and Rish Lakish says he doesn't. The question is, what's the case we're talking about? Idomalu Atam Edai, is it that he calls together people and he says, I want you to be Edim, that I'm going to make a declaration right now that I owe money to Shimon? My time is the Rish Lakish to Kapater. Then why would Rish Lakish say he's Pater? If you admit in front of Edim, then if you admit in front of Edim, then you should be chayev. The idoloy amalu atam edai. If he didn't specifically say to the people, "You're my Edim," my time is the Rabbi Yochanan. Then what's Rabbi Yochanan's reason that you to say that he's chayev? Yeah. The answer is lo olam doloy kamalu atam edai. You could say that it's talking about the case where he didn't tell them that you're my Edim. V'hachem mayaskin and do amalei chayev ani l'chamana b'shtar. The case is that he says that there's a shtar involved over here. The shtar says, I owe you a money. But there's no, Rashi learns that this case is, there's no signature on the shtar. So it's in his handwriting that says, I owe you a money. But there's no signature on it, but that's the thing. Because he wrote it out, so wait. Rabbi Yochanan Amachayev, Alima Milsa the Shtar of Commander Domal Ratam Adim Dami, when he gives a shtar, even though, no, it's not a real full-fledged shtar, but he did hand it over in the presence of Adim, therefore, even though there's no signature on it, the fact that there's a shtar plus Adim, that's the equivalent of telling them, you're my Adim. He doesn't explicitly have to tell them, you're my Adim, because the very fact that they're standing there when he gives that shtar means that it has that effect.
You're my Adim of what? The shtar is not signed.
He didn't tell them, you're my Adim. That's the thing. He took out a shtar that said, that's written on it, I owe $100 to Shimon. He hands it to Shimon in the presence of Edim. He doesn't actually tell the Edim, I want you to witness this transaction. Now, that's the question. Rabbi Yochanan would argue that the fact that we have a written shtar over here, plus Edim witnessed the transaction, even though there's nothing actually signed on the shtar, those two things taken together are good enough. You don't actually need him. They witnessed, even without him deposing them as Edim. They're just standing around. They witnessed him handing over. Yeah, yeah.
But they even witnessed that he owes them the money.
Doesn't matter. According to Rabbi Yochanan, that's good enough. Because
they
looked at the shtar, yeah.
They looked at the shtar, so what? I can look at the shtar.
Because there is ksav yodai, hoitzi olav ksav, Rashi brings over here from a mission at the end of a batra,
yeah.
That actually, if it were to be signed, it would be considered a full-fledged shtar. It's not signed over here, but nevertheless, it's handed over in the presence of Edim. So if he had told the Edim Atam Edai, then there's no question in Michayev. In this case, because if he didn't tell them Atam Edai, but because there's a shtar over here, then we would argue that those two things together are good enough. Rish Lakish Amal Pata Layal. What? That he actually considered to owe the money. Yeah. Rish Lakish Amal Pata Layal Lemon Mills of the Shtar, whereas Rish Lakish says he's Pata because the Shtar is not strong enough. Actually, the situation that we'll continue tomorrow because it's a matter of time now, but just to explain real quickly, there's two major approaches that the Mefarshim take just to deal with what exactly is the underlying principle that the Gemara is arguing about over here. Is it the matter of are we considering the shtar to have any validity? Or the shtar plus edim, or is it really a different angle? Are we looking at the angle, does a person have the ability on his own word and his own written shtar, to actually obligate himself in something that something that he may not have been obligated in? Is it a matter of hadah that when we say that he makes this declaration, it's considered a valid admission, and therefore the guy can collect on that basis? Or is it, we're not talking about hadah, about admission, but does a person have the ability to bind himself like that, to make himself liable for something that other than his own statement, there isn't really any evidence for? That's Machlokes Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish, and we'll continue tomorrow how that relates to our Mishnah.
And the answer?
We're going to get there. That's what we have to first deal with our Mishnah, and we have to deal with a couple of other cases, and eventually we'll get to the answer.
The question even applies if they were any of the shtars. Doesn't mean he was obligated. He was obligated himself, but he never gave him the money or part of it.
That's the thing. If I were to call together two agents and make a declaration in front of them without a shtar, without anything. If I were to say, I want you and you to be Aiden, that I owe you $100, you would be entitled to collect on that even if I never borrowed $100 from you or never owed you for any reason. There's no question about that. Here we're talking about there's no actual thing, there's no actual deposing them at the Aiden, but there's a shtar. We'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with how that relates to the Mishnah and so forth.